This podcast is brought to you by Podcast Nation.
Anyone else feel like a business class required in your schooling curriculum would have been massively helpful? Because same. We went to school to become therapists, and here we are 10 years later, really noticing the void in our knowledge on the business side of therapy, which is why we love our Masterclass membership. Masterclass has truly increased our confidence in running our therapy practice, the Therapy Group. Pros like Chris Voss, Robin Roberts, Daniel Pink, and Mark Cuban have filled that void and taught us so much about decision-making, negotiating, maximizing our time, and effective communication. This year, you too can learn from the best to become your best with Masterclass. Don't just talk about improving. Masterclass actually helps you do it. Plus, every new membership comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee, so there's no risk. And right now, our listeners will get an additional 15% off an annual membership at masterclass.com/shrinkchicks. Get 15% off right now at masterclass.com/shrinkchicks. masterclass.com/shrinkchicks.
Welcome to Shrink Chicks.
I'm Emily Beerley.
And I'm Jennifer Chaikin.
And we're licensed marriage and family therapists and owners of the Therapy Group.
We're on a mission to make therapy and therapeutic topics more relatable and accessible.
So stay tuned, because in order to grow yourself, you gotta know yourself.
Today on Shrink Chicks, we are so thrilled to welcome Erica Smith. She is an award-winning and nationally recognized sexuality educator who provides public and private sexuality education, consulting, and training. And she's the creator of the Purity Dropout Program, which we cannot wait to hear more about. Welcome, Erica. You have such an impressive background. Tell us a little bit more about what got you into this insanely important work.
Thank you so much. First of all, I am excited to be here. I feel like this is a Philly girl hang.
Yes, the best kind of hang.
There's a vibe with Philly girls. let's see. So sex education is an interesting field to end up in. I feel like nowadays there are probably very young people that say, I want to be a sex educator, but that wasn't presented to me as an option when I was young. So I was a women's studies major in undergrad. I went to Penn State, and the classes that really got me the most, that I was the most passionate about, were the like reproductive health and the classes that had to do with like health and wellness and, you know, just like the systemic medical oppression that women have been subjected to. And so I was deeply fascinated by all of the sexuality related classes. And so that's kind of where this all started for me. My first work was like outside of school, was at an abortion clinic. And so I did a lot of counseling and education in abortion care. And after that, I started doing sex education with youth in detention in Philadelphia. And that's the work that I stayed at for a very long time before starting out on my own.
Amazing. And so we on the show have sort of talked a little bit about purity culture. We've dropped the word and we realized that we've never fully got into it. So what better to do to fully go into this term and concept than come to you, the creator of the Purity Culture Dropout Program? So let's talk about what the fuck purity culture is, your experience with it, what you see, how we identify it, because I think it affects way more people than people realize.
Absolutely agree with you. So I am always very clear that I was not raised in purity culture, so it is not my personal background. But I have watched from the sidelines, first of all, as like abstinence-only education became the most common and promoted kind of sex ed in this country. And that really started, it started back in like the Reagan years, and then with George W. Bush, Clinton, they gave lots of federal funding to abstinence-only sex ed, despite very clear evidence that it did not actually prevent any kind of unwanted sexual health outcome. It didn't keep people from delaying sex. It didn't prevent like teenage pregnancy, and it did not reduce STI risk. So that is like, that is related to purity culture, because purity culture itself is like a philosophy that is being was really popularly promoted by the evangelicals in the United States. Purity culture as a concept is not a new thing. It's the idea that like women in particular need to preserve their virginity until marriage, and that a woman's sexual purpose is really only to please her husband. And that before that, she is not a sexual being at all. That's kind of like the central gist of purity culture. That's a very like quick summary. But so the philosophy is old. The philosophy is kind of something that other religions also share. But the way that American evangelicals ran with this idea and turned it into an entire movement in like the 90s and the early 2000s, that is what we, like when we refer to purity culture now, that's pretty much what we're talking about. So if you've ever talked to someone who signed a pledge to keep their virginity, like a true love waits pledge, or went to a purity ball or had a purity ring, those are some of the more extreme versions. But from the folks I work with, what I hear from them a lot is that they were involved in a church or a youth group or sometimes even public school education, in which they were taught that virginity was their highest value and that you could not have sex until marriage. You were not even supposed to think about sex. You were supposed to kind of divorce yourself from that part of you entirely until you became a married heterosexual. Because in this world, there's only straightness and there's only cisgender people too. So yeah, purity culture is just, but like, you know, queer and queer, not queer friendly by definition. So you would really only see yourself in those lessons unless you were like a straight person and a cisgender person and yeah, waiting until marriage to even consider your sexuality at all.
Mm-hmm. So my mother's Jewish, but I grew up in going to Quaker school and then public school. And then after our public school didn't go so well and I ended up in, you know, rehab and residential for a while, my mom put me into our local Catholic school because it was smaller. It's cheaper. It's like a lot cheaper to go to an archdiocese school than it is to go to a private school, but it's smaller. And so the funny part was my first year there, we had our abstinence only education and they gave us all stickers that said, I'm worth the wait. And the funny part is I had already had sex many, many times with many, many people.
Yeah.
Of all different types of bodies at this point.
And how did it make you feel to get that sticker?
Right. Right. So like, so it's so funny because the thing is like, I'm looking at this, I'm like, oh, this is so funny. I put it right on my chest. I'm like, I'm worth the wait. I've already had sex with half of you. And then this is very funny to me. But other people who didn't have that experience, that had been in Catholic education their whole lives, that this like really virginity was something important, right? So in Catholic school, also a lot of girls are having anal sex because they think it preserves their virginity and then yes, they can't get pregnant. And the other, a lot of girls were carrying this around like this was my highest thing, right? So like at the time I could see it as a joke, but you look around and other people, it's not a joke. It is so important. It's so significant in who they are and their worth.
Yes. Well, and it's so interesting because even the sticker itself saying I'm worth the wait, pretty much the, you know, connection to that is that you preserving your virginity means that you're worthy in some way, right? Like the sticker itself is telling you you're not worthy if you're not preserving yourself.
Exactly. And I had the same experience as you, Emily, where I was just like, at the time I thought other kids like that were like nerds, you know, like the church kids and the kids that were like deep into, you know, virginity pledges. I could not relate at all. But now as I'm grown and have a different perspective, I realize that they were being indoctrinated and they were being hurt and they were being used by like a political movement that has one goal, which is to control people. If their goal was actually to prevent STIs in pregnancy, they would be promoting comprehensive sex ed. They would encourage young people to talk about sex and their bodies, but they don't. So yeah, from the perspective I have now, I realize that people who grew up with that were being harmed and they had no choice in the matter.
Mm-hmm. And what an interesting time to have you on this show right now after everything that's happening in Texas. Right. So I know, right? So Jen, who is someone who is child-free by choice, always will be, like, right? You too, Erica, right? Like, there's a big fear of, like, holy fuck, my doctor, who I go to, like, a very, very, really cool progressive PCP, and they were like, hey, anyone who wants IUDs, you need to come in and get them now. Like, something you should always do is, like, we don't know what's going to happen in this country, right? Yeah. Like, how do you, as people with a uterus, take care of your bodies and your own birth control if we're not going to be able to access it? And that's a really scary thing. And I think a lot of people is always like, oh, you're so dramatic thinking that. But I don't think it is so dramatic.
No, it's not so dramatic anymore. And I remember feeling this way election 2016, and then feeling this way again when RBG passed away. Mm-hmm. This like, oh no, it's happening sort of terror. Like, no, that couldn't really be the case. I mean, I've been active in the like reproductive rights conversation for a very long time, but never has it felt so like dire.
Mm-hmm. It's scary. I mean, it's really terrifying. And I think the piece that keeps coming up and is kind of like an undertone of this is other people trying to control what you do with your body.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Absolutely. And
how harmful that is, you know, with purity culture. And I think even if you didn't grow up with kind of an overt purity culture, that there's always like an undertone of it, or there was an undertone, you know, when we were growing up. And that it is that sense of like other people trying to take control over what you do with your body.
Mm-hmm. I don't know if either of you are familiar with the background of why evangelicals decided abortion was an issue that they were going to rally around.
Educate us. Tell us.
Yeah, I get very worked up about this. Okay, yes. So.
We want this passion. We're here.
We're into it. I'm like amped up right now.
So decades ago, it was the case that Catholics were very interested in the abortion conversation. So when Roe v. Wade passed, that was in 1973. And Catholics were very opposed because they thought that life began at conception. But other religious organizations in America didn't really share that belief. Like, it's even on record that like Southern Baptists, evangelicals, they thought that, you know, it was something that like a woman should decide. And it was something that, you know, life began when a child was born, basically. Mm-hmm. And then in the late 1970s, it started with a Christian university called Oral Roberts University. They were going to be forced to desegregate and admit Black students. This is the 70s, right? They didn't want to do that because they found out that they were going to lose their tax-exempt status under the Civil Rights Act if they did not admit Black students. So they didn't want to do that, but they also knew that they couldn't get all the evangelicals on their side if they were like, we're going to be outright racist, please vote so we can be racist. So they decided strategically that they needed an issue to build political power around. And they had like, these were like, imagine like some old white men sitting in a room together, and they said, abortion is going to be the thing that gets people to the polls. We are going to rally folks around this issue, and that will create political power, that will amass power for our movement. And then, you know, once we have political power, we can put the people in office that will like let us keep our tax exempt status and therefore let us continue to discriminate. And that is what they did. And that is why abortion is now such a central part of American politics when it was never before. And you have all these young people who grew up with abortion always being an issue in their lifetime and always thinking that it was actually about life. And that is not how it started.
Wow.
You know the term like ignorance is bliss.
Yeah.
The more we learn, the more pain I feel.
Well, and this like thing that like I truly do believe is that like everybody loves somebody that has had an abortion, right? Every single person. I don't give a shit if you know it or not, you do. Mm-hmm. Right. Yep. And because abortion, what we know is even if we take away safe abortion, it's not going to stop happening. Abortion has always been a part of our history. It will always be a part of our history. But I think what you're also talking about, Erica, is like the desperate need for comprehensive sex education that gives this information. And purity culture, when we're putting this massive significance on the idea, even the idea of virginity, that's made up. right? Like, what? right? Like, you know, like this like very hilarious thing. And okay, we could talk to you all day. We're obsessed with you already. But so like, let's talk about how have you really seen purity culture affect people?
Yeah.
If you listen to one of our latest episodes titled Em and Jen Fall Apart, you know the current feelings of burnout that we're both facing. Running our business, the therapy group, keeping up with the podcast, and enduring a house renovation leaves little time for grocery shopping, meal prepping, and cooking. So we are extremely thankful for our sponsor, Hungry Root. When I received my first delivery of the Hungry Root box, it felt like a breath of fresh air. Hungry Root saves me so much time and offers customizable options. Plus, with perfectly portioned ingredients, I'm wasting far less food than I would if I were left to my own devices in the kitchen. No more throwing away wilted veggies or expired condiments lurking in the back of my fridge. Each order is fully customizable, so you can take their suggestions or choose anything you want. They've got fresh produce, high quality meat and seafood, smoothies, sweets, ready to eat meals, kids snacks and meals, vitamins and supplements, and much more. I discovered Three Little Pigs, spinach, feta, and egg bites in my last delivery, and they are my new obsession. Also, Hungry Root's coconut curry sauce is not to be missed. Everything from Hungry Root follows a simple standard. It's got to taste good, be quick to make, and contain whole trusted ingredients. Right now, Hungry Root is offering Shrink Chicks listeners 40% off your first delivery and free veggies for life. Just go to hungryroot.com/shrinkchicks to get 40% off your first delivery and get your free veggies. That's hungryroot.com/shrinkchicks. Don't forget to use our link so they know we sent you. Anyone else go through soap and cleaning products insanely quick? At both my house and at our business, we're constantly replacing plastic bottles. Did you know that an estimated 5 billion plastic hand soap and cleaning bottles are thrown away each year? And if that's not bad enough, most cleaning formulas are 90% water, which is heavy to ship, leading to excessive carbon emissions. That's why we are thrilled to introduce our newest sponsor, Blue Land. Blue Land is on a mission to eliminate single-use plastic by reinventing cleaning essentials to be better for you and the planet with the same powerful clean you're used to. The idea is simple. They offer refillable cleaning products with a beautifully cohesive design that looks great on your counter. Fill your reusable bottles with water, drop in the tablets, and wait for them to dissolve. You will never have to grab bulky cleaning supplies on your grocery run. Refills start at just $2.25. You can even set up a subscription or buy in bulk for an additional savings. From cleaning sprays to hand soap, toilet bowl cleaner, and laundry tablets, all Blue Land products are made with clean ingredients you can feel good about. And I'll be honest, I was a bit skeptical at first. Can eco-friendly products really tackle tough messes? Well, Blue Land proved me wrong. The products I received, like their multi-service cleaner and bathroom cleaner, were powerful. Grime, grease, and dirt don't stand a chance. Blue Land is not only good for the planet, but also for your wallet. And the starter kit I received was beautifully packaged. The bottles are sleek and sturdy, and the scents are amazing. Lemongrass, lavender eucalyptus, and fresh lemon. Or you can choose fragrance-free. Blue Land has a special offer for listeners. Right now, get 15% off your first order by going to blueland.com/shrinkchicks. You won't want to miss this. blueland.com/shrinkchicks for 15% off. That's blueland.com/shrinkchicks to get 15% off.
So in a whole variety of ways, depending on how seriously they grew up in it, but some of the things that I talk to people about and that I have witnessed is there are people that made it to adulthood without knowing some pretty basic information about their bodies. I've worked with women who did not know until their early 20s that women could masturbate. They, like, it was never presented to them as a reality. They also did not know what a clitoris was. People that have this body part didn't know what it was until they were in their 20s. Some people were encouraged to marry very young. And so a lot of folks entered into marriages with equally ignorant young men. Like, and I'm talking from the perspective of women, because women are most of my clients and most mm-hmm. of the people that like bear the brunt of this harm. But a lot of folks would end up in marriages like with other people that grew up in their church, and then they got married and suddenly they were supposed to have this, like, you know, be fruitful and multiply type of sex. And there was shame, fear. A lot of times there was pain. So vaginismus and other like pelvic pain disorders come up a lot. Deep shame after any kind of sexual encounter. Shame, like, you know, being unable to masturbate, unable to experience pleasure without shame. A lot of folks have trouble having an orgasm. I've worked with folks who, there's just so many areas to go here. People that don't know how to talk to their doctors about their bodies, who don't know how to communicate with their partners about sex. So it would never occur to them to say to their husband or their, you know, their spouse, like, you know, can we do it like this? Or can you be more gentle? Or can we try this? A lot of just like the belief that sex is something to endure and that other people do to you is something that people struggle with. And decades after they got these purity lessons, I've worked with a lot of people who still feel like their worth is tied to the specific act of penis and vagina sex. Mm-hmm. Like that is the act that's put on a pedestal. So I have a lot of clients who have done everything but, and they were very afraid to cross that line into penis and vagina sex, even if they're in their 30s, even if they've, you know, put it in every other hole they have. Mm-hmm. They're like, yeah, but this is the thing that will change who I am on a deep level. And that stuff is like stuck around with folks for like decades.
And it's so funny because it's taught from such a very young age. And I think one of the things Emily and I, you know, when we were in grad school, specialized in sex therapy and still specialize in sex therapy. And I think one of the things that I found really interesting that no one ever taught me, because once again, this kind of like underpinning of purity culture, is that kids are sexual from birth.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. When I mention that on my Instagram, I get people were like, this is child molestation. It's like people are so afraid to talk about this.
Yeah. And I think there is like, there's even a discomfort, right? Like I'm someone who like considers himself like incredibly sex positive, has done a lot of work there yet, and I'm a mom. And even when my toddler started first showing signs, there was a part that like I had a reaction to. Like I had like a visceral reaction of like, wait a second, like that's what she's doing right now, right? Uh-huh. Like she's like feeling her body and she's exploring herself and like, how do I handle this? You know what I mean? Like, and so even that thing of like, what do I do? And I think that we have also like villainized the idea, like children and sex, it's like automatically pedophile, right? So like, yeah. If I like help my daughter find healthy ways to masturbate, like am I a bad person, right? Because like there's such, like I feel like in this country, it's such like you're either, I mean, it's very Madonna and the whore as well, like this dichotomous thinking of like sex is evil or it's beautiful and for procreation. And the fact is most of us are having sex with nothing to do with procreation or marriage or any of these other things. And the thing that like, you know, it's so interesting, and I'd love to hear your thoughts about this, because one of the things that I will notice is personally, I started having sex around like 14. It was pretty fucking bad for a very long time because I didn't know what I was doing. And I also had an eating disorder and there was all this other stuff that was like occurring, right? And sex didn't really get good until I knew myself more and knew my body more. And that took probably a solid like 8 years. And I think other people, specifically people that are holding on to virginity or waiting until marriage, start having sex and they're like, oh, this is bad.
Yeah.
And it usually is kind of not wonderful at the beginning because you're figuring shit out.
And you're not taught about it at all. And you're not taught about your body, especially as a woman. And women are taught that pleasure, you are not supposed to feel pleasure during sex. And so you have to almost teach yourself and learn, you know, especially if you're not given resources. Of course, sex is going to be bad at the beginning.
Yeah. I feel like I'm a total outlier and that I had really great sex as a teenager.
That's amazing.
Yeah. I was in a committed relationship with a boyfriend that we were very much in love, and he's still one of my best friends. Like, you know, we broke up in 1999, but he's one of my best friends. And like, we were just like very exploratory with each other. There was always consent involved. There was always care of each other involved. And so, you know, when I think about the first time I had sex, it was really great. Mm. And I don't talk to many people that had that experience, but I feel like there were certain things in place that made it great. Like, yeah. I didn't grow up with shame. He didn't grow up with shame. We both had families that like let us shut our bedroom doors when we were together.
Wow. That's a big deal.
Yeah. And I don't even think it's because our moms were like, we are sex positive. Like, I don't think they would have known that term. They were just like, oh, we trust them. Like our kids are responsible. And you know, our moms were like young and cool. And again, nothing bad happened. Like, I got on birth control before I had penis and vagina sex. I was like, I went to the family planning clinic. I got on the pill. I waited 7 days. And then I was like, now we can have sex. And we use condoms. Because I was like, I'm not getting pregnant. So yeah, my sexual experiences as a teen were really good. But I think it's because I had so many important things. Like, mm-hmm. I checked a lot of boxes there. Mm-hmm. So, and not everyone gets that.
No, right. Okay. So you said like important things, right? Which was like, there was no shame. There was trust and privacy given. There was some education and like acknowledgement. I think you're right. I think most people don't get that. I would assume that's a lot of your clientele business.
Yeah.
So what do you see from people that didn't receive that? What are some of those outcomes?
I mean, absolutely difficult sexual experiences, like as younger people. So like their first sexual experiences aren't pleasurable, are often like violations. You know, sexual experiences where consent is not taken into consideration as much as it should be. And not everyone classifies this for themselves as assault. So I'm not going to call it that for mm-hmm. other people. But there are I've talked to a lot of people who just are like, yeah, I feel weird about the way my first time happened, or they feel like they were manipulated or coerced. And when we don't give young people good sex education, it leaves them so vulnerable to that kind of coercion and manipulation. When they can't name their body parts with real words, when they don't know like what, you know, the details of how sex works and that they have agency and that they can say yes and no to things, it really sets young people up for experiencing consent violations and manipulation, which, you know, going back to like you were talking about raising a toddler, that's, I'm sure you know this already, but that's why we think it's so important to tell young people from babyhood that they get a say in who touches mm-hmm. them mm-hmm. and naming their body parts the correct things. All that stuff is protective. Mm-hmm.
And that one, and I know, Em, that you're like very conscious about this with your daughter. And I love this because I don't think I ever got a choice in this when someone's like, oh, like go hug your grandmother or like go give them a kit, you know, like that there's, you know, you're telling them do something that maybe you don't want to do. And I know, Em, you're so
telling
conscious.
Them without a choice.
Without, right? They don't
go
have a choice.
Go do this, right?
Go
as opposed to, would you like to give your grandmother a hug as she
right.
leaves?
Right. So and often, I did not want to give anyone a hug or a kiss.
Still, you don't.
Still. I still feel that way.
You still have no interest in touching people.
Boundaries.
Boundaries. Right.
But I think it's true, right? So, like, a part of that, and that also goes to, like, our medical care now, right? Like, if you have a doctor, they should still be asking for consent. Like, I was very lucky that I used a doula throughout my birth, and my doula was like, listen, like, if the doctor doesn't say, like, hey, is it okay if I go and do an internal, like, exam, right? Like, if I do an internal dilation check, you know? And those were not words that most of us have been given with authority figures and with family, right? We're told that we like shouldn't have boundaries with those. And sometimes those are the most important relationships to have boundaries with.
Can you believe we're on year 5 of Shrink Chicks? We have been podcasting since 2019 and have somehow yet to change the photo of us on the cover of the podcast. We are planning a photo shoot in a few weeks so we can finally update our cover art. We both obviously need new outfits for the photo shoot, but really didn't want to break the bank. So thank goodness for Quince, where we can get multiple high-quality outfits for a very reasonable price. Quince is here to transform the way you shop with a range of high-quality items priced within reach. For the shoot, we want to go with a few different looks, one being monochrome, so I opted for a few key items from Quince's collection, including their Mongolian cashmere tee, classic trouser pant, and structured blazer. I couldn't resist adding their timeless 14-karat gold jewelry pieces to complete my look, because who doesn't love accessorizing? The best part, all Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman and passes the savings on to us. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices and premium fabrics and finishes, making me feel even better about my purchases. Indulge in affordable luxury. Go to quince.com/shrinkchicks for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/shrinkchicks to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/shrinkchicks. I was just going to say, I think as women too, you know, we're taught to please other people, right? We're taught like it's more about what they want and less about what you want. And if other people want a hug from you, or if you're going to offend them, that you have to make sure that they aren't offended.
And well, I think grandma's going to be sad if you don't hug her.
Yeah. So you have to go hug her. Right.
And you brought, I mean, you've both brought up fantastic points here, and one specifically about gynecological care and medical care. So many of the folks I've worked with are terrified to have that first appointment because they don't know anything that's going to happen, or they've had bad experiences with doctors that violate their consent. Mm-hmm. It's always, I mean, not always male doctors. That's a lie. I've talked to women who've had exams where no matter the gender of the doctor, they've been rough or they haven't explained things. And I've had clients whose doctors basically mocked them for not having sex and have been like, you're still a virgin. You're 25. Why? Like that kind of like shit happening in doctor's appointments. So some of the work I do with people is like letting them know, like, this is what trauma-informed care looks like. This is what a good gynecologist will do. They will ask you every step of the way if you're comfortable. If you can't, you know, use a regular speculum, they'll use a small one. Like mm-hmm. all of the things, like basically I feel like most of my work is telling people you have rights over your own body and this is how you exercise those rights.
Yeah. Which is amazing, right? Because we don't get that. So let me ask you this. And this is when we'll start to do a trigger warning. I want to talk a little bit about purity culture, especially as it has for sexual assault survivors.
Yeah.
So if at any point, hey, this is you and this is too triggering, this is a great time to get the fuck off this podcast and go take a woolly hot shower and take care of yourself, right? That matters most. But let's have a conversation going into that, because I think that there's a ton of shame, right? That like if we add impurity culture and the shame of being a trauma survivor. I'm wondering if you could speak to that a little bit, Erica.
Absolutely. So purity culture is rape culture. It goes hand in hand. They are like they're so intertwined, you can't divorce them from each other. You know, in rape culture, there's this overt messaging, like you are responsible for other people's sexual feelings towards you. You are responsible for other people's behavior. It's always a blame the victim situation. And in purity culture, this messaging is overt. It's not subtle. There's specific language used, like do not cause the men in your life to stumble. So women are taught that they are stumbling blocks, meaning your slutty shoulder or your bra strap, or, you know, if you wear a two-piece bathing suit, you are the reason that men cannot control their sexual thoughts and feelings. I see Jennifer over there just getting upset.
I'm in so much pain.
You just stepped back and just.
My first thought is like when in public school, when they, you know, you had certain dress codes, right? If you had a sweater that was off the shoulder, I remember getting yelled at for that. Anyway, so having a visceral reaction to this.
I mean, I feel like you are just demonstrating how so many of us have been shamed by purity culture rules, even if we didn't grow up in that kind of thinking. Right. Like dress codes for girls in schools, public and private, really play into this idea that like you can be distracting. Right. You can be the reason that other people can't control them.
And you know, men were never getting in trouble for any sort of dress code.
Of course not.
Of course not.
And also that, you know, that girls get sent home, right? Like, I had incidents in middle school where I got sent home because there was letters. There was, like a saying. Remember when it was, like, really cool to have a saying on your sweatpants on the butt? Why? First of all, that
was, like, very... like, juicy,
right?
Yeah.
Okay, exactly, right? Like, that was a thing. And I got sent home from school
and like the shame, the shame around that, too.
Well, yeah, because, of course, you're also mocked in the middle in a fucking home ec class, which I cannot even get into how comical that is, right? That the teacher was like, stand up, what do your sweatpants say? Go to the principal's office in front of the whole class.
Mm. I mean, another thing, I don't want to get too off the, like, main topic, but those dress codes are applied differently to girls with breasts and bigger bodies. So if you're a double D... and you wear a shirt that is just a little bit of a V-neck, they're going to look at you like a danger. But if an A-cup comes in that same shirt, nobody says shit to her.
Yeah,
and that is like just reinforcing the idea that somehow your body is bad, your body's unruly, your body is, it is a vessel for sin. Mm. And like, if you grow up just believing that your body is making other people potentially go to hell, like imagine the psychological effects that has on somebody.
I want to ask you, because we got an interesting DM a while ago. A lot of people send us in questions, different stuff. And somebody had sent this in and I was like, you want to know what? Let's talk about this. We have an upcoming episode of Purity Culture. Somebody wrote in, this is somebody who started having sex very young and has a lot of mixed feelings about having sex young, right? Like, so actually, they said, like, what are your thoughts on that being bad? Like, that actually was a mistake to be having sex young. She was like, I feel like there's a lot of conversation about how we should be sex positive, but I don't think that was actually a good experience for me either.
Yeah. Sex positive doesn't mean doing things that aren't right for you at the time. And it doesn't mean doing things that make you uncomfortable. So it is also sex positive to decide to not have sex if that is where you're comfortable. Mm-hmm. I feel like, you know, this DM is part of a larger conversation where I've seen, God, I just read a really bad take in The Atlantic. I think it was recently. It was about like how sex positivity is like betraying, you know, women, and it makes us like think we need to be super sexual. And that is like not what I push here. Mm-hmm. You know, having sex young can be a terrible decision for folks if they don't feel safe, if they don't have safety with their partner, if they don't have education about their bodies, if they feel, or if their motivation for doing it is like external, if they're like, well, it's going to make other kids like me, or it's going to make me more popular. Like, there are so many ways that having sex as a young person can be detrimental if there's not those kind of like safety nets in place. Mm-hmm. But I mean, it can also be wrong for adults too. So I think that the issue is less about age and more about like what else is going on in your life, and do you have all of the skills and all of the support that make sex a positive decision for you?
Mm-hmm. I guess you could say, right, there are a lot of young girls and young adolescents who you also use sex as a way of being accepted and a way of being like trying to get love, right? Like, these are real things that could happen too.
Or like closeness that maybe they are not getting in other ways.
Yeah, absolutely. A lot of the girls women I've worked with, they would do things like they were in purity culture, but they would give oral sex to guys to keep them around, to keep them interested, because they knew, they felt like their value lied in their sexuality because they were being explicitly told that by the church. Mm. And so for some of them, they interpreted that as, I have to keep this guy around, I have to keep him interested, but I can't do P&V. So then they would just like, you know, without liking it themselves, be giving oral sex to boys for love, basically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's just like gotta be just such a complicated time, right? Like when we're teenagers and we're trying to figure out who we are, and the most important thing to us is feeling accepted, feeling loved, feeling connected. And if we're not taught about sex and what sex means and consent, then I think it's so easy to slip into that of like, this is how I'm going to feel connected to others.
Mm-hmm.
creating a complicated relationship with sex.
You know, I know where the majority of these listeners are people that have uteruses. And, you know, what's interesting, though, I keep also thinking about the men that grow up in this and how they get fucked.
Yeah.
Right. That like they're because they're like told this very strong narrative of like when you get married, your wife is there to be with you and you're going to have great sex and things are going to be so great. And all of a sudden, you know what I mean? Like, and then one, they have no idea how to please their wives. They don't know how to communicate about sex. They don't even know what they like as well. And like, so like, it really is like a setup for failure for these two then adults to enter in this relationship and think they're going to have this like amazing sex life.
It's so hard on men as well. And that's, when I get male clients, I get so excited because they tend to reach out to me less. And I know there's, you know, there's so many dynamics that goes into that. Like, you know, men aren't encouraged to ask for help or admit that they are struggling. But the men that I've worked with, one of the things that they are dealing with the most is being told that they're predators and they're dangerous just for getting a boner, basically. I've worked with men who from very like young adolescents were put in these accountability groups, which meant that they had to sit in a group with other adolescent boys and men and admit every time they had a sexual thought, every time they saw something that turned them on. And so they have kind of coded that in their brains as like, oh my God, I can't look at this woman. Oh my God, I can't, you know, I can't indulge in the fact that I like find this person attractive. And it's like, not, we're not talking predator shit. We're talking like healthy sexuality. So some of the men I've worked with are like in their 30s and they're terrified to even date because they were told from childhood, from adolescence, that they are dangerous. It's their minds are dangerous in the way that the girls are taught their bodies are dangerous.
I'm wondering, just as you're talking, I'm thinking about, because I've had some clients too who are trying to navigate still being religious or like religion being an important part of their life, but also challenging purity culture. So I'm wondering how you manage kind of that dichotomy or that conflict between the two.
Yeah, that's a really great question. So some of the people that come to me are fully deconstructed. Some of them are like, fuck all that. I'm an atheist now, or I'm agnostic now, or I'm a witch. Like, I'm here for all of that. And then other folks I work with are still, they're still pretty religious. And I, again, like, I'm not a religion expert. I don't give a shit what your like religion is, but I'm here to give you like sex information, and a place to deconstruct all of that. So the folks that I work with that still, you know, they're very much, they're always folks that are like faithful to the teachings of Jesus as Jesus was a person, not as this like white American racist, you know, like fuck the poor kind of Jesus, you know?
Don't let the immigrants in. Don't let the refugees in.
Right, right. Those folks don't come to me, but it's right. The people that are like, you know, my Christianity is about love and charity and about like giving and about like, yeah, you know, reaching out to the poor, and I'm basically communist. Like, I get those folks. And there are ways to reconcile like the love and teachings of Jesus with positive sexuality, because the Bible doesn't actually, all the shit that people have interpreted out of the Bible, like, you know, God hates gays and God doesn't want you to touch your, you know, someone else's butthole, like, that's not in the Bible. And there are really brilliant Christian thinkers who have a body of work that helps people out with that stuff. Because I'm not a Christian thinker. Some of the people that come to mind are Nadia Bolz Weber, who is a Lutheran minister who is incredibly badass and wrote a whole book called Shameless, A Sexual Reformation. And in that book, she like breaks down Bible verses that people have used to shame sexuality and actually interprets them in a very sex positive way. Another person is Jo Lumen. Joe is a woman of color who is a brilliant, like, she is so fucking brilliant. If you should follow her Twitter, J-O Lumen. And she just like breaks down all this toxic theology in the most brilliant way. So there are people out there doing that work. So you can still be a Christian and reject purity culture. It's there.
That's awesome. I know that we have to get to calling BS, but I also, so give us an idea. Who would be a really good fit for Purity Culture Dropout? Because maybe there's people listening that are like, oh, I think that like I have some of this, but I like, what do I need? Like, who would be a good fit?
Yeah. Anyone of, you can be any gender or age. So I don't care if you are, you know, 20 or you are 70 and you are like, I still feel that the shaming messages I received about sexuality are preventing me from living the kind of life I want. So regardless of your age, gender, your sexual orientation, or even how much you care about sex. Like I work with people that are asexual. They're not that interested in doing the sex act necessarily, but they want to like break up all the crap in their minds that they learned about sex and the way that they learn to relate to other people when it comes to sex. Anyone is a good fit for Purity Culture Dropout if they are like ready to really embrace the topic of human sexuality from a positive lens, from an accurate, like medically accurate lens, a queer inclusive lens, and a pleasure positive lens as well.
You know, it's interesting. A few months ago, we had India Oxenberg, who was a big part of the Next Game Hall.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
And India talked a lot about how right after she got out, she was not in a place to do therapy, but she worked with a deprogrammer, right? That is actually what she needed more than therapy, right? And in some ways, that's kind of like what you're talking about. Is like, I'll meet you with no shame and give you information and help you like explore these thoughts.
Yeah. And I think my work, you know, I'm not a therapist, but I think what I do pairs very well with therapy. I always encourage my clients, like, do you have a therapist? Like, I can help you find one that is going to be a good fit for you. And a lot of my clients have actually been therapists. I have worked with a psychologist recently, was one of my clients who needed her own purity culture stuff. And she said working with me made her better for her own clients. And so I can think of like at least four therapists who have done the program with me, and they find like the benefit is not just personal, but also professional.
Absolutely. Because the more work that they do, the more they're going to be able to help their clients do the same kind of work. And I'm wondering, just for the people who don't know, what the Purity Culture Dropout entails, you know, how many weeks, what that looks like, just in case people are interested.
Yeah. So I use the name Purity Culture Dropout as kind of an umbrella for like all of the offerings I do. So there's like webinars and support groups, but the program itself is like people choose either like 6 or 10 sessions or anywhere between 6 and 10, depending on their personal needs. But we would meet and do, it's all one-on-one work. So you get like me, undivided attention. We dive into all of the things that you are specifically struggling with the most, the things that you feel like are your particular like sticking points. And it's different for everyone. And then we have conversations about it. I give you assignments. I give you lesson plans. I give you like, you know, read this book, watch this TED talk, like have this conversation with your partner. Like there's homework involved. Mm-hmm. And every session is designed to move them towards the goals that they have told me they have. So the way that it works for you is going to be different than the way it worked for Emily. Like everyone's experience in it is like specifically tailored towards them.
Amazing. I can't even tell you how incredibly helpful that probably is for so many people.
It's such a cool offering. Well, we were talking about one of our amazing clinicians that we have worked with has a book coming out on consent in children's and is doing a children's. And so doing a little market research the other day, Jen is looking up like other e-courses for talking to your kids about sex. It was fucking horrifying, Erica.
Horrifying.
Oh, I'm so afraid.
I know of
the fantastic ones, and I just kind of like close my eyes and ears and I'm like la la la, like pretending the other ones aren't out there. But
oh my
scary
lord, it was one of the scariest things we've ever seen. Staying close to God.
Yeah, there was a lot of mentions of God.
And like that isn't gonna do shit when it comes to like preparing your kid for the world and interacting with other people when it comes to their bodies. And I'm not surprised you found that shit, because the way sex education is the conversations around sex ed in this country right now are fucking bananas. Like,
bananas.
I mean, like, QAnon folks are going to school board meetings and threatening school board people for trying to, you know, turn our kids transgender and like things that aren't fucking happening. There's a lot of like the deep, like right wing conspiracy theory, like hysteria around sex education right now playing out in like small town school board meetings across the country. And it's really frightening.
Oh my gosh. Okay. So with that, great leeway into calling bullshit.
Yes.
Our favorite section. Anytime we have a guest, tell us, call some BS in your field. I'm sure there's so much. It's going to be hard for you to choose.
Oh,
what
my
do you
gosh.
Got?
Okay. Here's the first BS that is coming to mind for me is that there are folks that are like, I have a different perspective on purity culture, but it's the same old shit in a new package. Mm. And this comes from a few angles. It comes from like new age spiritual people who create Instagram accounts that say things like, if you have sex with another person, your souls are entwined forever and you absorb all of the negative energy from their previous sexual partners and you carry that for the rest of your life. Have you heard this stuff?
Yo, can I guess
I guess
it's a white woman who says that she does wellness?
Because it always is.
It's a
or
white
a
woman.
Man.
Right. Yeah, it's a white men and women. They've probably done a lot of Kundalini yoga and Jesus fucking Christ. Like there is a part of like the wellness cult here that is like so problematic and is a big QAnon factor.
Yeah. I call this shit like new age purity culture because it is not done with Christianity as the background, but it is still deeply shaming and it just puts so much meaning on sex that, you know, if that's how you feel personally, I love that for you, but I do not want you to tell every other person that having sex absorbs the souls of all the other people they've fucked. I have seen people selling crystals to cleanse you from all the people your partner had sex with before.
I would need a lot of crystals to be cleansed.
I was gonna say that sounds
how
really
many
terrifying.
Souls of crystal? How many do I need?
I don't know. We might need like the crystal, like the insertable vaginal crystals for that.
I think they sell that on Goop. That's no 100%. Problem.
Probably. Yeah, the new age purity culture. And I've had folks tell me, like, yeah, I was initially attracted to that after I deconstructed Christianity because I was looking for something else to fill that void. And I was looking for someone else to tell me how to be. But it's the same old shame. Like,
well, and I see it as spiritual abuse.
It is absolutely.
It's moving from
abuse.
One guru to another.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, there are Instagram accounts out there that they're always, like you said, run by some like white wellness person, you know, like a man on the beach with long hair who posts a lot of selfies of himself, like, you know,
looking
at his abs.
Yeah.
Or like doing some kind of yoga pose and just being like masculine and feminine energy are complementary and you need an exact ratio of each. And, you know, a real man does like just bullshit.
Bullshit. I mean, when I hear that, I'm just like, what are they even saying?
But if they're hashtagging, the sacred feminine, then there's a good chance, right? Like that's a thing. And I think it's like a really important thing to talk about. It's like if you're leaving one like high controlled situation, you're going to be attracted to more. So whether that's like an abusive relationship or whether that's moving into another thing, like, and that's something that we also have clinicians have to be aware of, is that like we can become clients gurus when they're coming out of that, you know, and like, you know, we can give information, we can help people on this journey, but like your life is your own. Right. And like one of the biggest things coming out of the situation is how do you develop that for yourself?
Yeah. And that is really the central thesis of everything I do is like, I don't want to create clones of me. I'm not out here to like make a bunch of other like queer, sex positive, feminist babies. If you turn out that way after working with me, that's fine. But if you're also like, you know, I'm still like a conservative lady married to my husband and I want to do missionary, like that's great too. Like I just want people to find what is true to them.
Mm-hmm.
And like, you know, I do get clients that'll say to me, like, I just want someone else to tell me what to do and tell me what to believe. And I'm like, I'm sorry, I'm not gonna do that for you.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that and that's a perfect example of like you not being a guru or expecting to be a guru in some way.
Oh yeah. I do not want that.
Erica, thank you for coming on. Where can people find you? Because I think so many people have found this conversation important, I hope. So how can people find you, locate you, follow you for more?
Yeah. So my central hub is Instagram. My Instagram handle is Erica Smith Sex Ed. My website is purityculturedropout.com. I also tweet under Erica Smith Sex Ed, but it's much less professional. Half the time I'm just shit talking about like TV, but I do have a Twitter presence. Instagram is where all the good education is though.
Amazing. I would love to shit talk about TV too.
As well.
Yeah. I've taken an edible and now I'm going to tweet. So that's kind of what my Twitter feed is like.
We're going to have another episode where we just do that.
Let's have a whole episode if we just microdose and record it and we can do all of this together. I think that's really the future here, guys.
I love you two so much that I'm like, when are we going to have drinks?
Yeah. We're going to have drinks. Jen and I just got over COVID 2 weeks ago, so we're ready to party.
I'm so sorry.
Listen, we're getting through it. We are getting through it, you know?
I think we got the vaccine too early.
Yeah.
I got vaxxed January.
Yeah, so do we. Watch out.
Yeah. Protect yourself.
Still not smelling a lot. Erica, we cannot thank you for coming on. We're going to link all of this information on our on all of our Instagrams. Follow this amazing person. Hey, if today's episode related to you or somebody that you might know, please send along. You can always rate, review, subscribe, unless you're going to give us 1 star, then you know, maybe don't do that. Follow us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio, all the things it would be. We love you. Thank you for being here. And don't forget to grow yourself. You got to know yourself.